everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week and a huge matchup to preview as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 77. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat once again with Greg Cosell from NFL Films as we break down the Eagles coming off their second straight loss, this time at the hands of the Washington Redskins. Greg and I will give you our thoughts on what we saw on both sides of the ball before we give you a preview of the undefeated Minnesota Vikings in a matchup that I can't wait to analyze. Next up, we've got Scouting Report, where I want to talk about a player that is integral to their defensive success and a guy I loved coming out of college a few years ago. We've got a ton to get into, so let's not waste any time. Greg and I are about to dive deep on this Eagles-Vikings matchup and provide you a recap on the loss to Washington last Sunday. Let's get to that segment now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell, also Eagles game plan analyst. And Greg, very excited as we get to preview this Eagles-Vikings matchup, a big game on Sunday afternoon here at Lincoln Financial Field. I'm excited. We just got done filming the two segments that Greg does for that show, and I'm really excited about how the show is going to come out this week.
I hope we're as excited maybe Sunday at 4:30 as we were doing these segments.
Yes, I really hope so. But before we get to next week in Minnesota, because I'm going to be honest, I've been very excited to have this discussion with you all day because of what Minnesota can do on both sides of the ball and just how these two teams match up. Let's first just rehash Sunday afternoon, the loss down in Washington against the Redskins. Let's start offensively. A lot of talk about Carson Wentz, but more importantly, the protection up front. And let's start there. Offensively, from a protection standpoint, you know, a lot of the narrative in the local media this week early on was that the Eagles didn't do enough to help Hal Pulavadi-Vaitai in his first start as a rookie. I went back and I watched. I saw a lot of cases where, you know, they slid protection, they did chips, they did a lot of different things to try and help him. Not to mention, you know, there was a couple screens thrown in there. There was play action. There were things that were built in to kind of help a rookie offensive tackle. What did you see when you went back and watched the tape?
Well, we charted, first of all, all the pass drops.
Yeah.
And there were 27 pass drops in
yep.
the game. Now, of those 27, there were 11 plays where there was a running back aligned to the side of Vaitai. On 7 of those 11 plays, the running back chipped. Okay. Then there were also 7 plays with a tight end on the line of scrimmage or a wing tight end who often helped. Okay. So really on about 65% of the dropbacks, there was another player, a back or a tight end, in position to help. Now, you don't always have to make contact with the defensive end.
No doubt.
If you're in position, very often it just slows down the pass rush just enough. And in the NFL, you know, just half a beat, a quarter of a beat is enough. So I think the Eagles, as the game progressed, clearly tried to help Vaitai.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things, and one of the things I've learned over the years, it's kind of like a battle of attrition when you start to do that. And it's the same, you could be said, flipping the other side, talking about all the pin blocks coming from the perimeter from the Redskins' offensive, the receivers on the outside against the Eagles' defense. But when you have backs and tight ends chipping edge rushers play after play after play, those edge rushers, they start playing with their eyes going both
Correct.
Ways, looking at the quarterback and at the chipper, and it kind of delays that rush.
But keep in mind what it does to an offense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It basically reduces the number of eligible receivers by one. And in an offense that likes to get a Darren Sproles quickly out to take advantage of matchups or a tight end out because – there's a lot of three-man route concepts in this offense, in this pass game, it limits a bit what you can do offensively in your pass game, and that's a critical element.
That's a huge element, and it's something that we will talk about as we talk about this matchup
yep.
against the Vikings on Sunday. Carson Wentz, it was his second loss, under pressure a lot, off and heavy early on in the game. What did you think about his ability to handle that pressure?
Overall, pretty good. You know, it was an odd game. It was an odd game as we sat watching it,
yes.
you and I, on Sunday, and it was an odd game on tape as well because the way the game played out, they had no opportunity to get into any rhythm offensively. And for quarterbacks, and I've talked to quarterbacks about this, that's the hardest thing. Because quarterbacks want to get off to a start where they can complete some balls, get into the flow of the game. And the Eagles had that stretch, other than I think a kneel down at the end of the first half. It was something like 37 or 38 consecutive plays that the Redskins offense ran.
He didn't throw a pass in the game for like an hour.
Yeah.
In real time.
And so I think it's difficult. You know, the play that stands out as a real positive when you talk about handling pressure was the in-breaking completion he threw to Aguilar.
Yeah.
Where he had to avoid the pressure, great pocket movement, kept his eyes downfield, reset his feet on balance.
Yes.
And made a great throw. You know, that to me is what quarterbacking in the NFL is. He didn't break down, and he didn't drop his eyes.
And there was the play that came back because of the phantom block in the back ball on Wendell Smallwood, where he found Dorial Green-Beckham on the in a scramble situation, but you saw the ability to also evade pressure, keep your eyes downfield, find a moving target, and hit him and create yards after catch.
Now, I thought you know, one of the things that is standing out after five games is there are little bouts of inaccuracy would be too strong, but ball placement not quite as precise as you'd like at times. You know, he can be a little wild high, and I think they're working with him on that. He came in, and you and I both really liked him coming out of North Dakota State, but he was an upright thrower. They've been working hard to get him to bend his knees a little more and to throw with a better balance, better bounce, and I think that will help him not have balls get away from him high. But every once in a while, that happens, and that needs to be corrected.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's, you talk about how it was kind of a weird game. The run game was effective, but you couldn't get into a rhythm because of how the game was. I thought they couldn't do anything off the run game
because they couldn't get into that rhythm.
Right. It was a tough game from that respect,
yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. They had some success with the run game. And you and I talked during the game. We kept saying, well, it's time to throw. And you made a great point. You said, I don't think they'll do that because of the protection issues. And you were right. Because ultimately, the protection issues, unfortunately, kind of took control of this game. And we'll get to that for this Sunday's game, which I don't know why I'm smiling, because it probably won't be a laughing matter. But still, when you have to – look, football's a game of numbers on both sides. And there's a lot of teams, they want to get five receivers out. And if you have to start reducing the number of receivers you get out into your route concepts, it limits your route concepts.
And the one thing when you talk about the running game that has stood out to me, and this is from – I want to say it was week two. I think it was week two on Eagles game plan. We had Doug Peterson on the show talking about the run game. And Ike Reese brought up a great point. He said, Coach, you know, throughout the game, you showed a willingness to stay committed to the run game. And it's something that, you know, even as a former quarterback, you know, that was something Andy Reid got killed for when he was in Philadelphia. They bailed on the run game too quickly. And Doug said, look, I know as a former quarterback that the run game, A, is really important, and B, takes patience. Even if it's not working early, if you keep grinding at it, you keep pounding at it, at some point those linemen are going to get into a rhythm, the timing's going to be there, and you're going to bust one open. And that's stuck with me, even in positions where, whether it was 2 weeks ago against Detroit, last week against Washington, where they had early deficits to kind of work back from, he didn't bail on the run game, and I like seeing that.
That's what the run game is. You hit it right on the head. The run game could be 2, 3, -1, 6, 2, 3, 9. I mean, the run game isn't let's just hand off and get 30. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
So you have to stay with it, and eventually, you know, the 3-yard runs become 6-yard runs. Maybe a 6-yard run becomes a 12-yard run, and then you break one.
Which kind of takes us into the other side of the football, and the Washington Redskins.
Which kind of happened for the Redskins.
Yes. Well, that's what I was thinking was going into the game, a lot of people, when I had written that the Redskins had a really good run game, and even though the numbers were not there in terms of overall ranking in the league, when I watched that team on tape, first of all, the offensive line is ridiculous up front when the point of attack. And then also just the multiplicity of the scheme. You know, all the different run schemes. I mean, Greg, we almost hit double digits in all the different concepts that we saw from the Redskins offensively. But when you look at it from a defensive perspective, I think a lot of people are very quick to say, oh, the wide nine's fault. It's the wide nine's fault. It's the wide nine's fault. I think regardless of what defense you are playing, the way that they played this past weekend – was not good enough to stop the run. There were missed tackles in the alley. There were missed fits inside. There were guys that over-pursued from the backside that didn't make tackles. There were guys play side that didn't hold up and set the edge. There were a lot of issues in the run game that we hadn't seen through 4 weeks, and they showed their head on Sunday.
Look, you know, people, when a team can't stop the run, they always want to know why. And when you get right down to it, there's really two things that are involved in the run game, and it's gap integrity and lack of discipline with that, or it's the inability to get off blocks, to stay blocked.
Yeah.
And those two things, and missed tackles, you know, they're always a factor.
No
I
doubt.
Mean, obviously, that's a third thing, you know, missed tackles as well. But I have to tell you, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I thought when Benny Logan went out,
it was tough.
Everything changed.
No doubt.
He has been so good. And even in this game, until he got hurt, I believe in the second quarter, they were not bad. I mean, there were a couple of runs against them, but he really controls the middle of that defense. And this was not a good game for Fletcher Cox. And it may have been the worst game that I can recall seeing him play from beginning to end. And he got handled in the run. Their D tackles got handled in the run game.
You know, and the other thing that stood out to me, too, was just you watch the, it's like you said, people are always looking for one thing to point to. And to me, it was a lot of different things. And that was one thing I tried to point out earlier today when I posted the shots getting ready for the defensive recap of the game was, look, it wasn't just the fact that, oh, you know, the offensive line was able to get up to the linebackers and that's why. No, it wasn't just that. There were plays all over the place from every position group at every level that, look, all these guys are going to have to look in the mirror and say, we've got to be better than this. And they all know that. You know, I'm not breaking news here on the podcast by saying that. It's certainly a thing that they're going to have
really
to get.
They were really hurt by outside zone in this game.
Yeah.
A lot. Sweep, too.
I mean, you had receivers coming down and cracking defensive ends.
And then
as
the game progressed, they started running more inside with some double teams on the D-tackles. And that's what I said. The D-tackles, you know, it ended up being Cox, Avayo, and Allen. And they had a tough time.
Yeah, no question. So you talk about the run defense. Let's talk about quickly the secondary. You know, the Redskins, they've got a good receiving core in terms of being very well-balanced. You know, lots of different threats at different levels and different skill sets. They complement each other well. How did you think the secondary overall looked? It wasn't like I thought Kirk Cousins probably had his best game so far this season, but it's not like Kirk Cousins was throwing the ball over the yard. They had so much success in the run.
Right.
What did you think overall of the DBs so far?
Well, you know, one thing we can't see a lot of when we watch the game is what the specific coverages are. So when I watched the tape, I was somewhat surprised by how much man the Eagles played in this game. And they played a good amount of man the week before as well against Detroit. And I think it's a legitimate question to ask, and I would assume Jim Schwartz and staff are going over this, are the Eagles' corners good enough to play such a heavy dose of man? You know, earlier in the year, there was a lot more zone. I thought anyway, I mean, without knowing the specific charted numbers, but it just seemed, watching the tape, that there was a little more zone. And I thought in the second half they played a little more zone this week, but it's still been a heavy dose of man. And, you know, again, just I watch every team in the league, so I see what other teams do and all the other players. And, you know, it's just a question I thought watching the game this week on tape is, are the Eagles corners good enough to play a heavy dose of man?
I kind of think looking ahead to this Minnesota offense that you would probably, you know, who knows, we'll see. I guess we'll see Sunday. I don't know why they would go away from it. I would imagine they would probably stay in man because, you know, you look at this Minnesota receiving core, you have Kyle Rudolph, who obviously is a big part of what they do offensively. Stephon Diggs may or may not be in the lineup. It sounds like he's going to be kind of questionable throughout the week. Adam Thielen has made some plays for them. Charles Johnson's made some plays from the outside. I wonder how they're probably going to look at
this receiving core, with the exception of Diggs, and we'll find out, and think that they can match up. And again, when the Vikings are in 11 personnel and the Eagles go man, they'll match Jenkins on Rudolph, the tight end, and I think the Eagles will feel comfortable with that.
Do you feel Kyle Rudolph's obviously off to a pretty hot start? He's been able to stay healthy relatively through the start of the season. I know you liked him coming out of Notre Dame. So far, he's had a good start. Good pairing right now with Sam Bradford, who has had success throwing to the tight end, and Norv Turner also.
My fantasy friends are happy because as soon as Bradford became the quarterback, I said, Kyle Rudolph, he's going to throw the ball a lot to Kyle Rudolph.
So what are the different ways that they've been able to use Rudolph and try and isolate him on defenders and try and create situations for him to
well,
have success?
Well, he's become a movement piece. I mean, you see him as ex-ISO, you know, on the backside of trips, the single receiver to the short side of the field. You see him use it that way. He's a motion guy. He's a shift guy. They do that a lot with him. Sometimes he might be the single receiver on the backside of trips and be aligned right on the line of scrimmage as a line of scrimmage tight end. You know, he can be the inside slot if he's on the three receiver side. So he lines up in a lot of different places. Now, what coaches do is they map out the specific routes he runs from each location so they know what he runs as ex-ISO or what he runs as inside slot or what he runs if he goes in motion. You know, they know what he runs. But he's been a big factor in the red zone. And he scored touchdowns from different spots in the red zone. He's been a line of scrimmage tight end. He's been in the slot. He's been ex-ISO at beating corners. So he's a big, particularly if Diggs doesn't go, he's a big, big part of this pass offense.
And Thielen has made some plays, too. He's been pretty impressive watching. I knew very, very little about him going into the week of film study last week and then into this week. What has he done to impress you so far?
You know, he's one of those guys who has a really good feel for route running, and he just has a good sense of how to sell routes. And because, you know, route running is truly an art form. Route running has nothing to do with whether you can run a 4.2 or a 4.6. That's irrelevant. And he just has a very good feel for understanding the leverage of corners, particularly in zone, but also in man, depending on the coverage. But a real good feel for understanding the leverage, attacking that leverage, and then getting open. I mean, it's you know, if you have a good feel for the leverage of the corner, then you can get open.
Our good friend Alex Smith put out on Twitter earlier this morning, on Tuesday morning, saying, if you could describe the Sam Bradford era in Philadelphia in one word, how would you do it? And he was writing his preview for the Eagles-Vikings matchup. He got a bunch of different responses. So that made me think. I said, I'm going to ask Greg a similar question on Sunday. I'm going to put you on the spot. So I'm going to put you on the spot right now. If you could describe Sam Bradford right now with what you've seen in the last five games from him in Minnesota.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, it's why? What is it that has made him so effective in this Norv Turner offense?
Well, first of all, I think that Norv Turner is one of the best offensive coordinators in the league. And I'm sure some listening will remember Norv when he was with the Dallas Cowboys.
Troy Aikman.
Early in Troy Aikman's career. Yep. They happen to have Jay Novacek, a really good tight end back then. And there was a lot of timing and rhythm to that offense. Now, Troy Aikman had a purely stronger arm than Sam Bradford and was more of a power thrower but could also throw with great touch. But Bradford in some ways fits that system the way Aikman does. There's a timing and rhythm to his game. He's careful with the ball, just like Troy Aikman was. They don't throw a lot of interceptions. Yet, he can make every throw. I mean, he made a throw against the Houston Texans to our good buddy Adam Thielen on a far hash deep out throw. And he made it easily. You know, I watched the throw and it was like, oh, there's a completion. And then I looked at it again, you know, because I end up watching every play three or four times. And I went, wow, that's a far hash deep comeback throw. Not every quarterback is making that throw with ease. And he's, you know, people forget he was a consensus number one pick. We've had this conversation when he was in Philly, but it's worth having again. He's had five different offensive systems in his 6 years in the NFL. I'm not sure people truly understand what that means for a quarterback. I think this particular system fits him really well. And keep in mind, he's having excellent success not behind a big-time offensive line. This is a makeshift offensive line. I mean, now they're playing Jeremiah Searles. I remember watching him in Nebraska, and he's a free agent who was playing right tackle. He's actually playing better than Andre Smith did, but he's still a free agent right tackle.
It's not often that a team can lose their first three tackles in the first 5 weeks and still be undefeated.
And have an effective passing game.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And I'll tell you what, Bradford's debut against Green Bay.
He made that throw for a touchdown to Diggs when he got hit. That was as good a throw as we've seen this year.
A ridiculous throw. So it'll be really interesting just to see his return to Philadelphia. It's gonna be a great matchup.
Yep.
On that side. Offense.
There's one side we haven't gotten to yet.
Yes, and I wanted to save it for last. And let me kind of take us through this a little bit slow because I want to kind of set it up because this Vikings defense is very fun to watch for guys like you and I, and I think the people that listen to the show also can appreciate how fun this defense is, too, and all the challenges it can present in offense, regardless of what's going on up front, who's at quarterback, who's running the football, who's calling plays. So let's just first talk about, I guess, what has been a staple for Mike Zimmer, and that's the double A-gap pressure. Before we talk about any of the wrinkles attached to it, double A-gap pressure with the mug look. And what I mean by mug look is that if you close your eyes, you can imagine it kind of a wide front, okay? So two wide defensive ends, 2-3 technique defensive tackles. And you think, all right, 2-3 techniques, who's inside? You have two linebackers right on the line of scrimmage on either side of the center, so right up on top of the center. What are the issues that presents to an offense, whether it's a quarterback and a protection?
Well, first of all, you can never allow anybody to run clean at your quarterback from the inside.
Never.
Never.
Cardinal rule.
Right. So if there's two players on either side of the center, they have to be accounted for. Now, they may come, One may come, neither may come. But you don't know that.
So you have to
account for them. And there's two ways to account for that double A or double mug front, as we like to say. You can either do a full slide with your offensive line, in which case your offensive line handles that, okay? Or you can have your center and your back in the backfield handle the two mug linebackers. That's really the only two ways you can do that. Now, if you slide your offensive line, that means you're going to leave a defensive end on a back. I've seen teams do that.
Yep, no question.
It can be done. Then you have to decide how you feel about a back on Everson Griffin or on the other side, Brian Robeson or Danelle Hunter. You have to decide how you feel about that.
Three guys who have been extremely disruptive. I think all three have over four or over five sacks on the season and are really, really good at getting inside blockers and driving them into the backfield.
Right. Now, if you decide to block the double mug front with your center and your back, then at least you have offensive tackles on the defensive ends, which, by the way, the Vikings feel very good about dictating those one-on-one matchups with their defensive ends. Everson Griffin is a load at the right defensive end position. He lines up wide. He's got great quickness and speed off the ball. He's a good athlete, and he can beat pretty much any left tackle in the league one-on-one. And they know that, and that's one reason they do this double mug look, because not that often do they bring both guys. That's not – bringing both Barr and Kendricks is not really a staple. Will they do it? Absolutely. And by the way, we could talk about this for hours.
I know. That's...
But by the way, not only do they have Barr and Kendricks inside, but sometimes they then even do stunts, because what they've added – one of the wrinkles they've added to this – is Brian Robeson,
yes,
who's normally
this is the
a
one
defensive
wrinkle
end,
to bring up. Yep.
Is they now stand him up in a two-point stance as one of the three techniques, basically at a D-tackle, and they'll do stunts. They'll do games with those three guys, Barr, Kendricks, and Robeson. And that's hard now.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it on a whiteboard, and again, if I ask you to close your eyes and kind of imagine this, unless you're driving, of course, the 2-3 techniques, if you're looking at it on a whiteboard with Brian Robeson standing up inside, it looks exactly the same. It's just another guy standing up. It's just another guy right there in the B gap. But when you stand that player up from a personnel standpoint, now it just expands what you can do from a game's perspective. They drop Robeson sometimes, and it just adds what they can do and all the deception of what they can do defensively and from a pressure standpoint. There are times they drop all three guys out, and it's only a three-man rush. But like you said, it dictates to the offense how to protect and creates one-on-one matchups on the outside, which becomes very important in this matchup because you've got Halepulavadi Vaitai on the perimeter. So now, how will the Eagles first handle things inside? By the way, Linval Joseph is a load inside as well,
yes,
as a defensive
tackle.
How are you going to handle things inside? And then if you want to continue to help Vaitai, how can you do both? And that's going to be the big question, because the other thing, so let's keep going.
We haven't even gotten to the fact that they bring Harrison Smith down on the edge at times.
And if they're playing a man coverage, not a huge man coverage team, but on third and long, they do play a lot of two-man.
They played a ton of two-man against the Houston Texans 2 weeks ago in their last game. And we were all surprised in the matchup room at NFL Films with all of a sudden they played a ton of two-man.
Yeah.
And now, so will they do that against the Eagles? Look, they may take the approach, and you just have to talk honest X and O football here. They played a Houston Texans team with DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. They're now playing an Eagles team. They may not think their receivers need to be matched up man-to-man. They're predominantly a two-shell zone team, and they may feel that, you know what, we can just play our normal two-shell.
Yeah, and so now the question then becomes is, if they are in man, and let's say you keep a tight end in, extra tight end in,
right,
to help in this double A gap look, now you're just adding another defender close to the line of scrimmage that could potentially green dog and add to the rush.
Correct.
So this it can get really messy in terms of a production standpoint, trying to figure out how are the Eagles going to protect this. Now, look, Mike Zimmer's not undefeated as a coach. There are ways to combat this. There are ways to try and attack it. That's why it's going to be a really interesting chess
match. They don't get a sack on every play either.
Of course,
right,
exactly.
Right.
They average a sack. I think it's one out of every 10 plays on third down. But,
right.
Or, you know, it's something along
those
lines.
They're pretty good.
They're a good defense. But there are ways to combat it. And one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of short passes over the middle of the field.
Right.
You know, because what you'll see is, and you mentioned it, what they'll start to do is they'll show pressure inside. and bring pressure from the outside, which means they're taking those guys that are lined up inside, whether it's Anthony Barr, whether it's Eric Kendricks, and they're expanding. They're running out to the flats. They're running out to the curl, the hook spots, and zone coverage, and you're opening up a little bit of a crease in the middle of the field. So those short crossing routes, the quick slants, we may see some of that this week. Some plays down the seam might be available this week. I think the screen game, double move, I'll be very interested to see how they try and attack it.
I've seen teams the last year or so with Mike Zimmer, under Mike Zimmer, where they've been able to get their back as a part of the pass game, and that maybe sets up Darren Sproles here and there. You know, if they play man, which they do, every team plays some man,
sure,
obviously. But no, this is a really tough challenge because their personnel is better than the Eagles. And that's just the reality. So now the Eagles have to really execute at a high, high efficiency level.
I want to say I looked up on Sunday before our Redskins, you know, because I was already working ahead towards Minnesota. I usually try and work ahead as best I can. I looked at all of those snaps the Vikings played against empty this year. I think it was 10 or 11 plays. They blitzed it three or four times. How do you feel about going empty against a defense like that? What are the pros and cons of that kind of look?
Well, if you go empty, the ball's got to be out with either three-step or quick five-step timing.
Yep.
That's normally what teams do with empty. So now that means that the routes obviously have to be in sync with the drops. So that means they're quicker routes. So now you have to win early. So the question becomes, if the Vikings feel that one, that's going to happen, or if it starts happening and Mike Zimmer is a quick adjuster, you know, will they start getting up in the face of the wideouts and press and take and disrupt the timing? So that's the cat and mouse game, the chess match game that you face if you go empty. Now, I don't know, maybe this is a no huddle. You know, it's like they opened the game against Chicago,
right,
where they went no huddle and they tried to play fast. You know, not fast in the sense just snap the ball immediately, but, you know, at least maybe prevent some communication and some adjustments for the Vikings defense early in the game and see if you can offensively develop a rhythm, particularly coming off a game against the Redskins in which you developed no rhythm.
Getting into it's just going to be a really interesting matchup, seeing if the Eagles can get into that rhythm, how the Vikings then try to counteract
right
that rhythm. Remember, they're coming off a bye. You know, we'll see how they are coming on the road, off the bye, coming here to Lincoln Financial Field on
the
Sunday
other
afternoon.
The other option, too, is, and I know we can sit here and talk about the Eagles receivers, but they're NFL receivers, so they're going to have to run routes and they're going to have to win. The other option is to try to create some big plays with Max Pro, where you go play action, deeper drop, seven-man protection, and your receivers have to run routes and win.
Yeah.
It is the NFL.
No doubt. So it'll be a very interesting matchup, Greg. Looking forward to watching it Sunday afternoon here at the NovaCare Complex with you. Appreciate the time, as always, here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Thanks, Grant.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, you could follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's Notes content that gets produced here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know, I really appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on any social media channel. That's one way to support the show. But the other is to go onto iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to the show, give us a rating and leave us a comment. And I wanted to give some love to Bully P, who left a comment on our iTunes page saying how much he loved the show and how much he's enjoyed listening and learning each week. And he wanted to know some of the resources I use for learning more about the game. So here's my answer, Bully, and I'm going to give you, you know, a really granular response on this. For straight football strategy, you know, just from a pure X and O standpoint, I love listening to Greg, of course, and everything he does. Chris Brown from Smart Football, I think, does a great job. I think the guys over at Inside the Pylon are doing a great job of teaching the smaller things of the game each week on their site. So that's something you can check out. From a scouting perspective and a player evaluation standpoint, I think Mike Mayock obviously is outstanding. He's kind of the gold standard. I think Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network is always great. Todd McShay from ESPN, I think he does a really good job of forming his own opinions. Not that he necessarily always puts them out there, but I think he always puts his own opinions into the forefront of his evaluations. Guys like Josh Norris from Roto-World and Dane Brugler always do outstanding work. You know, Dan Hatman, former scout here at the Eagles, he runs the Scouting Academy. If you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of player evaluation, that's a resource you absolutely should try and tap into. Definitely worth the money there. You mentioned that you love the phrase that football is a chess game with 300-pound guys running at each other at full speed. I'll actually steal a phrase that someone told me in the past. Football is actually, to me, even more intricate than chess, because in chess, there are rules for each piece and where they can move and can't move. In football, every player is a queen. They can move all around the board at any time. So I really, really enjoy the X and O standpoint of the game for that reason exactly. So thanks to Bully and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier I wanted to profile a player that has really become a cornerstone of this Minnesota Vikings defense. Time to reveal who that is in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so the player I want to cover is a player we touched on a little bit with Greg Cosell earlier, but that's linebacker Anthony Barr, who I loved coming out of UCLA a couple years ago. He was just under 6'5", 6'04", 7", so 6'4" and 7/8", 255 pounds. He was a two-year starter on defense at UCLA as a rush linebacker, came off the right side in their 3-4 scheme. He actually started for the Bruins earlier in his career as a running back and a fullback hybrid. Before Jim Mora got there, they moved him over to the defensive side of the ball, and I loved Barr coming out of college, man. I mean, he was so much fun to watch. He had an outstanding burst, great closing speed in the open field, really explosive athlete off the edge, you know, can bend, accelerate, turning the corner, just looked really natural getting after the quarterback. He'll go speed to power. He used a spin move. He has a swim move, knew how to set the edge in the run game, just a really competitive player, will take on two offensive linemen at times, showed some pop as a hitter, and he had a good motor, played sideline to sideline. The questions that I had about him, he wasn't really a form tackler. You know, he was an unwilling tackler, but his ability to break down in space and make a tackle one-on-one was a question for me. Wanted to see him get bigger and stronger to withstand playing on the edge full-time in the NFL. I thought sometimes he struggled getting off blocks, and I wanted to see him get a little bit better with his hands as a pass rusher. I thought he was a smooth athlete, developing into a standout linebacker, really high upside, great potential. I loved watching him play. I thought if he got bigger, stronger, he could be a force off the edge, and I thought he could be a Sam linebacker or a rush linebacker in a 3-4, which the Eagles were running at the time, or in a 4-3 as a Sam. So what happens? He gets drafted in the top 15 to the Vikings. They turn him into a 4-3 Sam linebacker. Now he's a three-down player for them, playing almost strictly off the ball. He very rarely comes off the edge, which is really interesting. I did not project him to be in that kind of role, but here he is, and he's turned into such a dynamite player for this Minnesota team. Does a lot of pass rushing, just not off the edge, more inside. Like what Greg Cosell said, the foundation of what they do is A-gap pressure, and with a guy like Barr, I mean, it's really interesting to watch them play, because what they'll do is they'll line him up inside. He's so explosive still that even if you do block him with a running back, the running back is coming from a little bit of distance. He can eat up so much ground so quickly and get into the backfield so quickly. I've seen him be able, not just, maybe it's he doesn't get a sack or a hit on the quarterback, but he's able to affect a throw so quickly because of how much ground he's able to eat up. So as a blitzer, he's very disruptive. But then also, he's so rangy. You know, he'll line up as an A-gap player and then run out to the slot. You know, run out to cover a tight end down the seam on the opposite hash. Run out to cover a receiver lined up out wide underneath as an underneath player. He's just so rangy. He can play sideline to sideline. Really athletic player that the Eagles are going to have to account for at some point in this game, you know, both as a pass rusher and in coverage. It's going to be really interesting, like we talked about with Greg, how the Eagles decide to block this up and then also how they want to attack this Minnesota defense. It's going to be one of the biggest things that leads to a victory or a defeat in this game against Minnesota. So he's one of the players I definitely wanted to highlight in that segment. So great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening. Again, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, again, rate the show, leave us a comment. A lot of you guys have been going out and leaving great comments on iTunes and Stitcher. Keep doing it. I love it. It's a great way to support the show. Leave a question like Bully P did, and I'll answer it here on the program as well. I love to be able to make this show better each and every week. I'll take requests for everybody out there. So wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment wherever you listen to the show, and I will answer it here on the podcast. But all that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast for everybody here at the NovaCare Complex. I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.